This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It's April 25th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi!
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Or if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit and comment on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. I'm going to begin with Ron's Rant of the Week. And this is going to be in direct discussion with a couple of special guests that I have on the show here today, which I will introduce you to shortly. More to follow. Okay, here's my big gripe. Here's my rant of the week. Parents who don't let their kids ride bikes. I'm done with this. You got to stop this. You got to get your kids out on their bicycles. It's not dangerous. It's very safe. And it just sets the stage for so many things in life. It's a great thing. So if you're one of those parents who goes, well, I'd let my kid ride a bike. I can't do it. It's just not safe. I'm not comfortable with it. You know what? Get over it. Move on. That's my rant of the week. Additional discussion on my Facebook page. Please, I'd love to hear more about it. Give me your best excuse because I'm going to beat it. Anyway. On a positive side, as our weather improves and more people are out cycling on the roads, I would like to thank all of the people who are driving motorized vehicles for their patience and their consideration of the very vulnerable users that are out there on their bicycles. I have had some great experiences the last two weekends leading group rides where people have just been really considerate and they waving to us and just really been pleasant and nice, and it's very refreshing. So a big shout out to the people who actually are nice to us. We like that. My maintenance minute. Again, we're kind of trying to stay on the same ideas, the theme of my guests today. And the maintenance minute is thinking of letting your kid go out and ride a bicycle. Back to that. How about teaching them, him or her, some basic bicycle maintenance before you send them out there? Like, what do you do if you get a flat tire? How do you fix it? How do you put a drop chain back on the bike? Doing a quick check on a bicycle that's either tipped over from a standstill or has been in a crash to determine...
You could teach me this stuff.
I could teach you this stuff, but you usually just bring me with you. So Fran has her own personal bicycle.
I don't always bring you with me.
You don't. You don't. You know how to fix a flat, right? Do you want me to go over that again?
No, I'm not good at it.
We're going to go over it again. We'll do that again. Don't worry. So, and last but not least... sending your child out with the proper identification and a few dollars for emergency use, or maybe even a cell phone if you're allowing them to have a cell phone. I know some people have age restrictions on that, but we'll move on. After that, I have a really quick thing I want to put in there. You know, I have this fascination to bicycle racing, and it's a minor addiction. Anyway, the final race of the European Spring Classics was last weekend. It was the Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and it was won by just an unbelievable solo breakaway by Bob Jonkel, who rides for Quickstep, and he soloed to a victory with 18 kilometers still in the race. The comment he made is, I made the most of my abilities in the finale. I needed to be very careful on how to use my strength, especially when I got to Saint-Nicolas, Jonglet said. I couldn't push too deep, and I still feared being caught in the finale. It was the longest kilometer of my life. I only saw I could win when I entered the last curve, but not before. So big shout out. Really cool. It was a great race. If you're a bicycle race freak like I am, you probably had it on Steep Hill online so you could watch it live, because I do like to do that. And I did see it, and it was a heroic race. It was a great race. Moving to my special guests, I have two guests today, not one, but two guests. And my special guests are Laura Mullaly and her son, Kevin, who have come here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Nice to see you. All right. And I know it's the first time you've done this radio thing, so don't worry about it. We're just going to have a conversation, okay? That's what we're going to do. It's going to be fun. So Laura is a 56-year-old woman who is married to Michael and has been married for 30 years. She's a mom of six kids, three girls, three boys, ages 26 through 14. Busy lady. Laura grew up in Connecticut and traveled and lived from coast to coast. She was a professional in the insurance and telecommunication industry until starting her family. The entire Mullaly, I'm going to call you guys tribe, have lived in Wethersfield for the last 21 years. Laura has been a cycling enthusiast for the last 9 years, and all the Mullalys cycle in some shape or form, including competitive racing. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. That's quite a little bio. Nice little introduction, Laura. Oh, boy, you are one busy lady.
I am.
You know, and you know, I've met you through bike racing, obviously. I in putting on the cyclocross races, I think that's probably where we first met, maybe.
I think we did meet at the cyclocross race that you host every year.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I'm just really impressed because, you know, you bring these kids to the races. They're obviously very, very into the they're into the racing. You've brought them up right, as I like to say. So you've done a really, really good job in introducing them to a sport that I have a personal love for. And I love that. I just really do. I start every single interview with the standard question, which is, and I'll start with Laura and then I'll move to Kevin. Your first experiences that you can remember of being on a bicycle.
My first experiences are obviously riding around my neighborhood. I grew up with a twin brother, and I remember us getting brand new bikes when we were 13, and we would ride around the block. And one of the blocks had a school in it, so we would cut through the school parking lot, and we would just repeat, repeat, repeat. Maybe it was my first Criterium experience. We had quite a few bikes growing up, but that's the only childhood memory I have of riding just around the block.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. That's great. That's awesome. Kevin, you were like born into like cycle mania.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So what was your very, very first experience that you can remember?
Well, the first thing I can remember is being taught by my older sisters, one of my older sisters, being taught to ride my little tiny bike without training wheels along the sidewalks of the Tuesday Night Crit.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And that's a Tuesday Night Crit that's over in East Hartford?
Correct.
The Rensselaer.
Right.
As the race was going by, his sister was on the sidewalk teaching him how to ride without the training wheels. It was kind of an interesting moment. But, you know, you did say that correctly. He really was born into cycling.
Well, it's kind of hard to get away from it in your family. I mean, everyone rides. We were doing a ride, oh, gosh, what was it? It might have been last year we were doing the Sunflower Ride, which goes down into Voluntown and Griswold and this beautiful sunflower farm down there. And we're going along, and I could feel a presence coming up behind me. And as that presence gets closer, I hear, "Hey, Ron, how you doing?" And it was your husband. And he was, but he had your oldest son, I think, with him. And they were putting some blazing speed down. They were flying. They went flying by us. But I looked over and went, "What are you doing here?" And he goes, "Oh, we just chased down the ride. We were trying to find you guys all morning." So anyway.
Well, that older son of mine is a Cat 2 racer, and he is on a scholarship for cycling, and he is hard to keep up with.
Yeah, he looks pretty smooth. He looks really smooth. It's really fun to see, you know, when you see someone that has developed up to that level to just look and see how, I'm going to say it, how pretty they look on their bike. They just look like they belong there, and he's very, very comfortable there. And Kevin, I think you're pretty comfortable on your bike too, aren't you?
I am. I enjoy riding my bike very much.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's
fun. It's kind of a cool thing you can do. It's fun, and you get fitness out of it. You feel good. You can go places. It's a good thing. So that's great. So we got your first experiences there. Now, this is – you've been riding your bikes for the whole family, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said the whole family is doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I started riding and brought them all with me.
Okay. So. That's great. So are you the inspiration?
I am.
You
I
are.
I am. About 9 years or so ago, my husband found a bike on the side of the road, which we started to call it the bus, because it was rather heavy and it had the toe clips and the down tube shifters. And he thought that I would be able to ride that alongside a couple of friends I knew. And that was quite an experience riding that bike compared to what we ride today.
Yeah, there's a big difference. There mm-hmm. really is. But gosh, that's how you started out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. You've evolved.
I have evolved, yes. I've really embraced the N+1 philosophy of bike ownership.
Fran is a big believer of that.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot. So how long have you been an avid cyclist?
Probably about the 9 years. Once mm-hmm. I learned to ride, my first ride I did on that old school bus, I had to get pushed up the hill. And when we stopped at a friend's house to say hello, I thought my legs were just going to die. They felt like noodles underneath me. I could barely walk, and I rode only 10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really an interesting experience. But I joined up with a neighborhood friend who was an avid cyclist at the time and just started doing a woman's group ride.
Oh, nice.
And I continued. They did 2 days a week. I only did one. And I just continued showing up and just continued to push myself and want to keep up with the group. And little by little, I just kept building up that fitness.
Do you have an athletic background?
No. I did not.
Other than putting 6 kids on the earth.
Well, I played ice hockey.
That's a bit of an athletic background.
Yes, yes. You are right about that. I played hockey for 2 years on a boys' team because I grew up in a family of hockey players. But that was the extent of my athletic life when I was 10 and 11 or something like that. I did not pick up the bike until I was 47 going on 48. So
wow.
I had no fitness to me, no athletic background at all.
That's impressive.
I think it was quite incredible to just keep building on that.
You know, I tell people all the time, it's, you know, you can get on a bike at any point in your life, and it'll bring you to the rest of your life. It'll really, you know, extend it out. We have a member of our club who is turning 91 this year. Shout out to Saul Nesselroth. And he rode 90 kilometers on his 90th birthday last year.
That's awesome.
And, you know.
Well, I agree with you, because the reason we embraced cycling was because you can do it at the age of 6 or at the age of 60 or mm-hmm. 90, 91.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You also can do it right out of your driveway,
yeah.
or you can put your bike in a car and go meet friends for a ride or to get on a trail or an adventure, some of the big, you know, rides that people do, like Farm to Forks and some of the bigger rides. You can haul your bike or you can ride right out of your driveway. And that makes it really inconvenient.
Right. So what determines an avid cyclist to you?
Well, for me, I call myself an avid cyclist because I live, breathe, talk, move. Everything is filtered through cycling.
I never noticed that.
I'd like to say it's not. I'd like to think I am multifaceted, but everything usually comes back around to cycling for me. I rode about over 6,000 miles last year. My goal this
wow.
year is 7,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And I do both road, cyclocross, and mountain biking. I've done track and some time trials also.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think of the track?
I love the track.
Really?
I do. It's pretty intense. You have to have a love for that red line effort.
It's a little intimidating, too, isn't it?
It is intimidating. My son, who's at school, is a great track racer.
Really?
He can thread the eye of the needle with his bike
Ooh.
On the track.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the, I'd say there's two places where I think the best bike handlers come from. And one is on the track, I
mm-hmm.
believe, because it's like, it's crazy, stupid fast. It's crazy stuff. And the other one is cyclocross. Because you develop skills that, yeah, you'll get those skills if you're racing a criterium or if you race on the road. But they get thrown at you a little bit quicker when you're on the track and when you're on a cross bike.
Right. It is true that different venues require different sets of skills, but transfer over well. And that's what I found, because I was more of a road cyclist then moved into cyclocross, then moved into more mountain biking. Mm-hmm. So I could see the different level of skills that I need to work on every time I go out riding.
Yeah, each one has its own definition for sure. And it's and the places where you really got to keep your eyes open too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's cool, but the track is I've only been on a track once, and that's my fault, because I think it would be really cool. Did you go to Trexler Town? Where did you go?
Cascina.
Oh,
and the Girodano in South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
There's in Rock Hill, South Carolina, they built a fabulous facility down there. There's a track, and then there's a BMX course, and there's a Criterium course.
Now, that's where your oldest son is, right?
Yes, he's down there. He's actually in North Carolina, but it's right next door to South Carolina, the Rock Hill track there.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So he's going to be spending a little more time on the track then, I guess, huh?
Yeah, track season is usually in the fall. It's tough for, well, actually it's late summer, fall. It's kind of tough because he's really a cyclocross
I know
guy.
He is. Yeah. I know. So. Yeah, the whole family seems to have caught on to that.
Yeah,
I know Kevin likes it.
Fun. Yeah.
What do you think? Tell me about cross, Kevin. Tell me what you think about cyclocross.
Cross is honestly my favorite aspect of cycling because it's a really good in between mountain biking and road. It's the same kind of geometry of bike of road, but then there's the off road aspect of it. And the idea of pushing yourself until, like, you can't go anymore is a good idea because it makes you feel like you have more in you. So when you think you're at your end, you can keep going.
You got to dig a little, huh?
Just a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I first met you, you were probably about 10 years old, maybe, when I first met you. Is that when you first started racing cross?
Yeah, I've been around cycling my whole life, but when my 10th birthday is actually like when I was going to get my racing license.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about when I started racing.
Yeah, yeah, very cool, very cool. And you just, you love it, obviously.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is, it is. It's very exciting. And you know what I love about cross is, and I say this all the time, is that it's an hour or less. And, you know, especially bringing kids into it, like you brought your kids in, it's a great way to get them involved in a sport that mm-hmm. could be all too consuming, and yet that attention span that we don't have as we are younger
is easy
to capture for an hour.
I brought my kids into cycling criteriums. So, which is kind of very unique because they're a little bit challenging. They're quick and crowded sometimes. But in the junior fields, they're not as crowded as some of the larger fields. But so they learned how to hold their line. And that's one of the things that was really important to teach them. And when we would teach other kids to ride, the importance of holding their line and being a predictable rider. You know, when you talk about other cyclists and how we merge with the community of motor vehicles, we need to be predictable cyclists. And that will allow the motor vehicles to understand us better.
For those of you who are just listening, you don't realize I'm actually bowing to you right now for what you're saying, because you're doing what I do. You're like an ambassador to the sport. And you're absolutely right. The more predictable you are when you're out there riding, the easier it is for us to work with the other vehicles that are on the road.
I think cycling is a great sport for families in general, and to move it outside of riding around the block for these kids so that they can have a little bit more duration or endurance, if you want to use that word. And it's a great activity for families to do together. Now, I was challenged by some people because I would take my kids out riding, and I live off of a busy road, Route 3. It would take us a little while to get down Route 3 and 17 to get into the more open roads. But my kids learned to hold their line, stay in line, be predictable, follow commands, hand commands when you're cycling, because we rode on a little bit busier of a road. You obviously, you know, didn't want to swerve into traffic, so they learned to hold their line well by riding on some of the busier roads.
That hold your line thing is such a it's funny because the first bicycle race that I ever participated in, where there were large number of people that actually knew what they were doing. It was a USA Cycling race, and I heard that statement so many times, sometimes not in the nicest ways, but, you know, people would always be preaching about holding your line. You'd especially hear it going into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what the effects are when someone doesn't hold their line at a corner.
That's right.
It really changes the way the whole flow of the rest of the pack goes through. So so you're racing currently actively.
I race different venues these days. I used to strictly be a Criterium and road racer.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered some track, and I don't do much of that because that's in New York. And I did couple seasons of cyclocross, including racing at Nationals in Hartford in that interesting weather scenario we
had.
Wasn't
that great?
That was very interesting.
You know what the word, but it's not interesting. It was epic.
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 Epic. Yes.
Yeah. And I've also done some mountain bike races.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a few things lined up for this year. I'm not exactly sure. It kind of can conflict with the kids' schedule. They race earlier in the morning and the women race later in the day. And sometimes it's just hard to hang out that long. But I do the training races quite a bit because the schedule works out.
Sure.
And I do all the driving and I do all the coaching and I keep them moving and, you know, I sign them up and pay for everything too.
How do you fit that all in?
Well, I do tend to juggle quite a bit. But I find cycling relieves a lot of stress for me. It's something I can do and push through my hard efforts and just work out life's struggles out on the road. Whenever you take your bike out on the road, it's so much cheaper than the therapist, you know?
I love it. I love it. And Kevin, where do you go to school?
I am actually homeschooled.
See, so you also homeschool your children.
Yes, and cycling is part of our schooling in that it's our sport, it's our fitness or physical ed, it's our discipline of managing your time and making sure you have your things set up to jump into what you need to do as opposed to starting from scratch every time we go cycling or get on the trainer. We have things set up so that we can step into it. And that makes it a lot easier.
Nice.
I think people struggle, and we struggle too. Everyone thinks it's easy for me to get on the trainer at 5:30 in the morning. But I do have my system set up, and it is hard to get started. Anything you do is hard to start. But you have to think about what it feels like when you're finished. You know, when you're done riding or you're out riding, pedaling your legs, that's when you feel awesome. So you just have to ignore running around for your water bottle and your arm warmers and knee warmers if you don't have them all together. You just kind of have to overlook that. And you have to imagine doing this with several of my children, because when I first started racing, I had my girls coming with me. And we didn't have enough gear, so we used to bicker over who was wearing which long pants, which set of gloves. We have since moved along to everybody owning their own gear.
Good. Good, good. You know, I mean, that's a challenge in itself, because I watch Fran's sister dealing with three children, three boys, and it's like herding cats to get anything done with them, because they're, you know, they're kind of, and no offense if they're listening, but, you know, it's to watch all that happen and knowing what it's like when you've got a window of time you have to deal with, and you're going out and you're riding your bike, and you're bringing kids with you, and you just, everyone has to be on board. That's
and that you need a good director.
Yeah. So do you think you're a good director?
I think I'm an awesome director.
Kevin's nodding like crazy over there. Yeah.
What? She's the boss.
She is the boss. Yeah. Well, that's okay. She's a good boss.
She's a great boss.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. So I'm just, I've always been amazed at how much you do and what you've done for cycling for your children. And I just... you know, this is a great opportunity for me to say, you know, thank you so much for what you do. I think let's look at this from, okay, so obviously you're a busy mom. You're a mom. You're a busy mom. You've got a very, very full plate. What would you recommend to someone like yourself or someone who's maybe not like yourself, who's thinking that, you know, maybe after listening to this show, maybe I should think about getting my kids involved in cycling, what would you tell them?
Well, I think the first thing you want to do is make sure you have some good equipment. Make sure your bicycle's working well. Make sure you invest in a good pair of shorts. And when you get out there ride, make sure you understand how your gears work. Because I find the biggest challenge to people that I ride with, new riders, is that they don't understand their gears. So therefore, cycling becomes hard, and therefore they don't want to do it again.
Right.
So I was on a ride the other night, and a woman was there, and she was, you know, she had a little bit of fitness to her, and I didn't know her whole story until afterwards, but I sat behind her and coached her on how to use her gears.
Right.
You know, move up the cogs in the back, move down the cogs in the back, you know, so that her riding experience would be more pleasant and more comfortable, so she wasn't drudging getting up the hills or fear of going down the hills.
Mm-hmm.
So that she, I think that is the number one issue that holds people back, is not understanding how their bike works.
Right.
And then not investing in some of the other useful pieces of equipment, like a good pair of shorts, because
right.
you can definitely muster up some energy when you're feeling comfortable.
Right, right, for sure. So you've brought more than just your kids into cycling, it sounds like.
Well, I do really enjoy coaching other women, because I think women really handle the sport well once they embrace it. I think it's a wonderful activity for women in how we can manage our weight, our physical well-being, our emotional well-being, our spiritual well-being, riding a bike. It just seems to really make it smooth for a woman once she gets the hang of it and keeps coming back for more.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm out on a ride, I'm definitely out there to coach other people, especially women, in how to get the most out of their bike. I'm willing, happy to do that. And ironically, I'm helping some girls now. I'm doing some coaching on a girls mountain bike team.
Oh, are you really?
Yes. And that has been so much fun, because they're to watch the girls embrace it. And the ones that have a mom or a dad that ride also, they come into it, you know, they come into it a little bit apprehensive maybe. They're afraid that they're going to get pushed beyond their limits. But mostly they're like, okay, I can do this. Okay, one step at a time. Okay. So we coach them on how to sit on the bike, how to pedal the bike, how to ride up the hills, down the hills, through the rocks. And little by little, these kids are catching on. And I was very surprised. I will say, I was very surprised with these girls, 9 to 14, we have 8 of them, that not once did any of those girls complain or sit down and cry or anything like that. And I thought that was very, very impressive of these young girls. And a couple of these girls are just embracing it. One girl's got a new bike. She's got new shoes with the clipless and everything. She's really going for it. So she has her parents supporting her, and that makes it all the more of a positive experience for her when the parent is out there doing it also.
Sure.
I think it's a great activity for families. It really builds a team concept, mm-hmm. as opposed to kids going in different directions all the time. It's great to say, listen, we're going to get on our bikes, we're going to get on the trail, or we're going to ride around the Rensselaer, or we're going to find a spot and go ride together. And you tend to experience things in a different way when you're doing it as a family. The great outdoors, things to see. Gosh, I didn't know there were so many covered bridges in Connecticut until I started riding a bike. So
right.
It's a great way to bond just you and your kids together, and you learn to appreciate each other and respect each other with their abilities. So it's a great bonding time. It's been really great for us as a family, obviously, because we're really embracing it. And just it's everything for us, as far as we know, every time we pedal a bike, that we're making fresh red blood cells and breathing fresh air. And that's just got to be good for us.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. So what are your age ranges of these girls that you're coaching?
We have a 9 and a 10. And I think a couple 12-year-olds and a couple more 14-year-olds.
Wow, really young.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. That's awesome. And you know, the concern that I had stated earlier when I was ranting about people that don't let their kids ride bikes, how do you talk to parents about you know, I want to take your kid out and I want to show them how to ride a bike, and how do you get them through that fear factor?
Well, I think if you make a good example, in other words, you say, listen, I'm going to get in front of you, or I'm going to get behind you and teach you how to use your gears. The number one thing that you teach kids is to look up. They need to look up at where they're going versus down at where their wheel is only a couple feet in front of them. They need to look down the road and see where they're going. And that makes a huge difference when we could start getting our girls to look up, look up, look up. Whenever they put their foot on the pedal, whenever they're starting out, whenever they're going somewhere, look up, look up. That's where you want to be. You want to be over there. So look at where you want to go. It's a great tip for getting kids to feel more comfortable riding. Give them someone to follow, teach them to look up, or get behind them and coach them on how to use their gears and how to turn and how to soft pedal and how to just enjoy moving or the pedals over and over again and seeing how that moves the bike down the road.
Sure. When you're coaching, do you find it easier to coach from behind or in the front?
I actually prefer to coach from behind.
You do?
I do, because I need to help people use their gears.
Right.
They don't want to use their gears.
Well, Fran went to a Carmichael clinic down in, was that North Carolina?
North Carolina, yeah.
And she went to a Carmichael clinic. It was a women's clinic down there. And she had a lot of
I had descending terror.
Anxiety. Yeah.
And then they put me in North Carolina on switchbacks. And I had this wonderful coach, Tracy Drews, and I'd never done switchbacks before. I was and I was terrified. When I first got on my first real road bike, which was a Specialized Dolce Elite, and it was, weighed probably 25 pounds or more. No, probably more than that, like 30 pounds. I don't know. It's a heavy bike.
Around 25.
Heavy, clunky bike. And it has no offense to Specialized, but not the best geometry. I was learning how to descend. I was terrified to descend down Bassett's Bridge Road. Our road where we live, there's just a hill going towards the reservoir. And I was terrified to do that. We're not even talking, switchbacks. I had a lot of fear of descending. I just, just losing control. I was going to go over. And then I went to this wonderful coaching experience. And I was getting a little bit better because he was helping me. But he would, when you're a couple trying to coach each other, there's issues.
Oh, that's, really?
That was probably not. But you don't know anything about that,
yeah,
right?
No. So I went to this this workshop, and it was with lovely women, some of whom were avid racers. And I wasn't an avid racer at the time, but I had a Pinarello at the time. And a nice Pinarello at 415, 14. And Tracy Drews was the coach in Carmichael. And so Tracy figured out, she saw how terrified I was, and she decided she was going to help me. And so what she did was she coached me from behind, just like you did. And she could see what I was doing, and she would do exactly what you said. She would tell me, gear up, gear down, lean this way, pick this knee up, put this knee down, mm-hmm. pedal, don't pedal.
Move out into the road more, get over to the right, get over to the left.
And it was because she could see what I was doing, and she could tell me exactly what to do. And it was so helpful, and it really helped me in my descending. And now, instead of being, a very cautious descender, I'm one of the...
Now you're ripping it up, right?
She's usually the next one in line behind me.
Yeah,
and I've been known to be the first one down a hill, even though I'm just a little person. But I haven't lost that skill.
Well, and then Amber showed me some more tricks. She helped me refine my form a little bit more, weighting my leg down and bringing one knee up. And, if I'm going into a corner, if I want to put my knee out, I can do that or not. But the whole thing about weighting the bike and, bringing your body forward, it was really helpful. And, there are times when I'm behind and I can catch people because now I know how to descend better.
So now I am coaching from behind because I learned from that this makes a lot more sense because I can tell a person exactly where I want them to be. And instead of just follow my line, which was the old-fashioned way of doing it and not so good, because I knew the correct lines, just go where my wheels go and you'll be fine, right? Doesn't work as well.
It works great for mountain biking, though, if you're showing the line when you're trying to climb over rocks and gullies.
Right.
But if the person is terrified and doesn't know what to do, they're just going to watch you go down the hill, and they're just going to be shaking in their shoes.
Well, it all comes from more experience, too, and trusting who you're with and just realizing that, okay, this bike is made to do this. I've trained for this.
Right, right.
As long as I don't grab a fistful of brakes, I should be able to get through this okay.
That's right.
And now when he's in front of me and he's, you know, he's descending, I do follow his. Now I'm like, I'm confident enough. I've watched his line and I follow the line. I do find it helpful now.
Well, I learned that following close-in criterium racing, and I taught it to all my kids, you know, and they would ride pretty close to the wheel in front of them, and some people would speak back and say, could you just not ride that close to me?
So,
but they learn good skills in criteriums. They learn good skills in road riding and great fitness in cyclocross. And in mountain biking is a whole different kind of skill set.
Oh, yeah.
So it really is a fun sport. And now where we are in this area, Hartford area-ish, there's great trails. The what's it, the Airline Trail and the Hop River Trail. And you can get on your bikes and you can really hustle along.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you sure can. And it's really safe, you know, if you're worried about cars for some reason. You know, it's certainly a very safe environment. Yeah, and we're just about to connect the Hop River to the Charter Oak Trail, too. The bridge is in, by the way.
It's, oh, great.
It's in but not up yet, but the bridges have arrived. So
I've done a ride
here.
From trail to trail. Last year I did a ride from trail to trail. It was some 60-something mile ride.
We've done those. We've done those, too. But it's going to be really cool because you could basically ride from Pomfret Center all the way to Hartford on trail.
That's
awesome. Which is really kind of cool.
It's pretty exciting.
It is cool.
I think it's great if people would take the time to introduce younger people to cycling because it's something that you can build inside of you. It builds fitness. And, you know, it's something they can tap back into later in life if they decide to give it up for a while. It's always in there. And there's a lot of people who run and then have to give up running because they hurt their knees.
Right.
And they end up on a bike. And they're like, wow, I wish I had discovered this sooner. So you can ride out of your driveway, you know, or you can ride for miles and miles and miles. You could ride for an hour. You can ride for 5 hours.
Right.
And it's pretty hard to, like, really kill yourself doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you can just pace yourself well and hydrate well and stop and eat. And you can do quite a bit of distance if you want to. Like, I love to ride to the beach. You know, I ride from my house in Weathersfield all the way down to Hammond Acid or something and back. And, like, that's like a great opportunity.
Yeah, that's quite a ride. That's
it is.
A healthy ride. That's,
Can we do that?
Can we do that? Sure, we can do that.
Yeah, okay.
We can do that. Right. That'd be fine. The catch is that if you're riding from here and you ride down to the beach, then you really do ride down to the beach.
Yes,
and
you have a little bit more hills over
and
here.
And then we got to climb a bit to get home. But that's okay. We can do it.
It's not long, though. I mean, our closest beach is probably going to be, what, Nyannick?
Yeah, Waterford or Nyannick.
Yeah.
It's going to be the closest from
where
we
are. Yeah, and I did that, and it was 40 miles.
Yeah.
You know, which is
down.
Fine
one way.
And then you have to go back.
But then the last 40 are all uphill. So you got to deal with
it's good
that.
For you.
But
you're
doing that if you're riding from Weathersfield.
Yeah. I rode, my longest ride last year was like 105 miles in one day.
Yeah, that's
It was fun.
Yeah.
I rode down to Essex area, picked up some riders, rode with them for a while, and then rode back home again. It was fun.
That's great. Do you ride by yourself mostly, or do you ride with others?
It's hard to say. I do probably 50-50. Sometimes riding with others is like I got to haul my bike somewhere.
Yeah.
And I might as well just ride out of my driveway.
Right.
And then ride, then catch them somewhere.
I know. We're very
fortunate.
I ride
with the kids a lot and my husband, so I ride with them a lot. I haul them around a lot.
Yeah.
They love that when I get out front and say, let's go.
Yeah.
I just put my earplugs in and we just go. Like, I don't care what you have to say back there. We're going to go. And we hustle along.
Yeah. So mom's pretty tough on a bike, Kevin?
Yeah, actually. She's a workhorse.
Yeah? Yeah.
No.
So you let her get up in front and pull you at any given opportunity?
That's the idea, but that's not always the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you trade off? Do you do pulls
with
her?
We do a lot of pace lining, yeah. It makes for a faster, easier ride.
Yeah.
I went for a ride with her last week, and we kept an average about 16, 17.
Yeah.
And how many miles we do?
We did 50 miles at an average of 17.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, scooting along.
And it was a fun ride.
That's great. How many of you were on the ride?
Just me and her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it's
I'll drag anyone around if they're willing, or I'll get dragged around. I don't care.
Yeah. As
long as you're on your bike, you're happy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's the principle that she always drilled into us was to stay on the wheel in front of you and to not let the gap open. So I took onto that really well, and I've been known a couple of times to be a little bit too close to the person's wheel and be a little too trusting. And I've gotten a couple times people turn around and be like, hey, you're kind of close.
Yeah, you can get yourself in trouble with that, too.
Yeah, but...
So have you ever tapped out on another wheel? Have you ever tapped on another wheel?
I have. I've had about maybe two or three bad wheel taps that ended in not so good.
And it ended up on the ground?
Yeah.
You know what you do when you tap a wheel, right? You know the response?
Yeah, you're not supposed to lean into it.
You're supposed to turn into it.
Yeah.
And it bounces you off.
Right.
It's exactly what you're not thinking of doing. You know, you look, oh my God, I'm going to turn away. When the second you turn away, down you go.
Yeah.
And people always confuse that. But I try to teach people that all the time. And also, you know, the idea of getting close enough that you're bumping with someone and not freaking out over it.
That's another thing that my mom really taught us to, when you touch handlebars or when you touch hands, it's not really that bad, and freaking out and swerving is the worst thing to do.
Right.
It'll take you down. That's the thing you have to watch out for.
A couple weeks ago I was riding with my sister and we were riding along talking. We bumped hands and neither of us even looked at each other. We just kept going. It was pretty funny. I mentioned
that's
it
great.
Later. Yeah.
That's so perfect. I love it. I just love it. And, you know, it's a skill, though. There's not a lot of people that can do that.
Well, the trick to that is to keep pedaling and look ahead.
Right.
The minute you stop pedaling or look to what's happening to the person next to you who's bumping you, you're losing your momentum. So, especially in crit racing, we learned that, you know, if anything happens, just keep pedaling. Pedal away. Pedal away from the crash. Pedal away from the person. That's what you got the pedals for. Pedal away.
Right. If you hear a commotion behind you, accelerate.
Yeah, a lot of...
Because you want to get as far away from the carnage as possible.
A lot of crashes in criteriums have a double crash because there was a tap of wheels and people go down and then person mid-pack will look back and then they'll tap the wheel in front of them.
Right.
Or they'll bump into someone else and that's how some people get really hurt.
Well, Kevin, you've been taught the right way to do it, and hopefully that'll keep you a lot safer out there.
Because, yeah.
Because it's, you know, there's an element of danger that goes along with racing your bicycle, because you're going to spend a lot of time close and all. So, Laura, the first time you were in a criterium, how was that?
It was fun. I really love criterium racing. I love the concept of finding the rider to follow, looking for the holes and filling them.
Right.
I love criterium racing. I'm just a little too old for it now.
No, you're not. You're never too
never
old.
Never too old to ride a bike.
I can't
keep up with the 20-somethings.
You know what? Neither can I. And you know what? Oh, well. So, you know, you deal with that. That's all.
I might jump into that Tuesday night crit this year.
Yeah, that starts in May.
May 1st,
yeah. Yeah, I was looking that up online earlier today.
Yeah, I'm so sad that I work on Tuesday nights.
I know.
It would be a big decision for me to change my practice life.
So that late hours on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
It doesn't work well for her at all.
It's a great way if you're a cyclist and you want to race or you want to build your fitness. It's a great way to build your fitness because you can ride in the race in the race. And if you're dropping out, if you're feeling like you can't hang on, you can – drop out a lap or two and then merge back in.
Right.
It's not an official race where you have to pull out. It's a great way to build a fitness. I cut my teeth in bike racing at Criterium Racing, so that's why it's just so natural for me.
And did you start out at Rensselaer Field?
Bethel.
At Bethel.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I started out at Bethel.
Little hill in it.
Yeah, when I first started racing, I used to take my Suburban and put five women and five bikes and drive down to Bethel every Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah, that was Aki Sato used to put
that
on.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That was a good race. It was always a good race.
Except for that hill.
Cool. Except for that hill. Yeah, everybody would complain about the hill, especially because that race was really early season.
Yeah.
And hills were, you know, completely foreign to people at that time of year because they didn't have, a lot of people didn't have the fitness that they needed to be able to do that.
Well, nowadays people are training through the winter and training in their basements with the smart trainers and fitness programs and all of that, and they come out strong. But the disadvantage sometimes is they don't have the ebb and flow of a group ride or a race. And so when you come out of the basement at the end of the winter, if you're fairly new to the cycling or group riding, you need to kind of back off a little bit and hold back just a little and see the ebb and flow of the ride or the race first. But sometimes these guys will come out of nowhere and be on the front end of a race, and it's like you're kind of like really screwing up the flow here. You're ebbing too harshly. Sit in, get the lay of the land, and then you'll fit right in.
What I call the accordion effect.
Yes.
You know, because it's in and out, in and out, and it's really frustrating and annoying. The biggest problem that I see with anyone who shows up to either a bicycle race and they're fairly new at it, or someone who shows up to even a group ride and they're fairly new at it and they're not used to riding with people, is the ones that come in with extremely good fitness. They're scary, because they can keep up. They've got that ability, but their skills are so scary that they tend to be dangerous when they're there.
I would agree with you. It's important for those folks to get in, say, your group ride, for example, and just kind of hang out in the back a little bit and see how things go and learn to follow wheels, learn how to hold a pace line, hold a line, read the signals. Just get to know what's going on in your ride first before you're out there going, yay, I can get up the hill faster than you. Good for you.
Good for you. That doesn't win races.
Yeah. So really I'd like to see some of the group rides around have more of a steady temperament to them sometimes too, so that people can merge in to group riding.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah. I think it's important to have a steadier flow so that the intermediate or the beginner can merge into it and come back week after week and start to build their comfort level with group riding, just or plain old road riding with more than one person. So it's kind of hard to get that, but you have to kind of set that temperament and speak to those folks who aren't really following that and saying you're disadvantaging everyone. People want to ride hard.
That's a good way to put it.
Go ahead and ride hard, but go ahead and ride on your own or with people who are just like you. But to come on a group ride and start hammering it and showing off, it really doesn't benefit anyone.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You know what I call that?
No.
I call it the battle of the egos.
Yeah, well. Okay? Yeah.
And here's the rest of it. When egos with him.
Mm.
There's always a problem.
Well, we all are egomaniacs to some extent. Athletes have to push themselves, and cyclists have to push themselves. We don't pass the ball. We don't hit the puck around. We have to push ourselves.
Right.
So we are our strongest advocate. So we'll push ourselves. And yet we need to learn how to ebb and flow that when we're riding with others or in a race.
Yeah, a lot of my non-cycling friends call cycling not a sport because they don't see the team aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
As in soccer or football, passing a ball, it's a lot of more team. But when I say cycling is a sport, I race. They think riding their bike around the block, that's cycling to them. But when I say cycling, I think racing and like road riding.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now here it is. The ones that come to you and they say that cycling's not a sport, you need to say, you should come ride with me. let me just show you a few things. And don't beat them up, you know, just try to do what your mom did with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get behind them and say, hey, try this, try that. You know, give them some skills, tell them to straighten that line out because they're all over the place. You know, do the basics and bring them into it. And then if they get testy with you, just bury them on a hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then wave from at the top and go, so would you like to learn now?
I actually had a coach say to me, somebody who coaches another sport, she said, she lifts heavy, and that's what she does. So I was talking to her about her sport. I said, so your sport is weightlifting. And she said, I don't have a sport. I lift weights. I'm like, what? No, wait, that's your sport.
Really?
You are... you do it regularly. You test yourself. You push yourself. You lift heavy.
Sure.
You have rest days. You have hard days. You that's your sport.
Right, right.
There's one other thing I'd love to say about people who are cycling. They're new at it or intermediate at it, and they get discouraged on a group ride or when they're riding with a friend or a spouse or a boyfriend. One of the things that makes cycling more fun is when you're doing better at it. So in other words, when you approach a hill, you're not ready to cry. You're like, I can do this. I've done this before. And one of the things that cyclists neglect is some form of training.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. You got
to get out there and practice a hill by yourself with one other person and just keep going up and down that hill. Keep going up and down that hill. So the next time you're on a group ride, you're not going to get dropped or you're not going to get afraid or you're not going to get discouraged because you can't make it up the hill. It does, if you put a little bit of practice into it, then you're going to enjoy the sport even more. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes people neglect is that they don't want to practice at it. They don't want to find that hill and just keep going up, 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 up it until they're too tired to do it again.
Find your weakness and focus on it and practice it over and over and over consistently. And
that's what I did. The last couple of weeks, I was like, all right, I'm doing well on the flats. I'm doing well on the sprint. I'm catching people. I don't like how I'm climbing. So hello, Palmer Road.
Yep, back out to the hills.
Yeah. And and so there's a whole bunch of parents because at the top of the hill I have a favorite short hill, I have a favorite medium hill, and a favorite long hill. And, you know, there's lots of them that I can use, but I assess hills for what I need to do and also for safety. Like if there's like Mount Hope Road here is a shortcut to Yukon. It's a good hill to practice on, but it's a shortcut to Yukon. So it's not good.
Yeah,
so I like ones that are, the short hill that I like, Palmer Road, the only thing is that at the top of the hill, there's an elementary school. So I was competing with the with these big SUVs, parents picking up their kids, and I was riding around. And I wound up hitting around 3 o'clock, and I was driving back and forth by school buses.
You want to choose your road carefully, and you want to find different levels of climbs. I like to instruct people to find something that's really short and steep because that's a useful piece of equipment, I'll call it, that's out there. You want to find something that's got a very consistent and steady climb that's longer, and you need a mid-range, you need a long range.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to find one that's got a mix of both. So you can learn how to regulate it, you learn how to get yourself to a point where you've gone over the steep part, you've gone to that anaerobic stage, and you're kind of gasping for some air, but you need to be able to, pull it back in again and get back down to an aerobic level and then be able to attack again on the next one.
I like what you said, gasping for air.
Yeah.
Gasping for
air. Sometimes people forget it's okay to breathe hard. You're not going to fall down. Your body will have a stop point. So it's okay to breathe hard. But I think some people are just, not as comfortable pushing through it, or they're afraid they're going to hurt themselves, or we're running into a red zone. Red zones are great. That's what gets you up the hill. But, it's okay to breathe hard. The other thing that's great for any of these cyclists out there is to find somebody who they can ride with. Somebody you like, somebody, and say, listen, will you take me out every once in a while? Can I meet you once a week? Do you have an hour? Can we go out together and let somebody teach you?
Right, right. Well, Laura, Kevin, this has been great. We just we burned up a complete hour here, and we have a lot more to discuss. You're coming back out, okay?
I'd love to.
Yeah. Kevin, you want to come back out again?
Absolutely.
All right. Maybe we'll try to bring out a couple of the kids that race, too, and we could put you all on the air. I'd still want to do an episode of that. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
That'd be fun,
to get a different perspective here. But it's great to have you here. I got to finish up with some stuff.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're more than welcome. We'll talk again for sure. So my guests were Laura and her son Kevin, Laura and Kevin Mullaly. They're from Wethersfield, Connecticut. Just a real inspiration to cycling. I'm just very proud to have you here. It was very, very nice. I'm going to finish up with a few things. We have some upcoming events. The New England Bike Walk Summit, April 26th through the 27th. That will be tomorrow and Friday. So if you're interested in that, that is in Boston. And there's you can go and check it out online at 10times.com /NEBWS. And you can check that out. There are also, I like to keep this in the reminder, National Bike to Work Week is May 14th through the 18th. It's rapidly coming at us. May is Bike Month. And Bike to Work Day, National Bike to Work Day, is May 18th. And there will be a gathering in Hartford at the Old State House at 8 a.m. So that's something you might want to consider looking into. Ride Around the Quabbin, which is Saturday, June 16th. And it is... there's a 62, a 100, and a 125-mile ride from Rutland, Mass. Around the Quabbin Reservoir. Beautiful up there. Absolutely. Not much traffic, plenty of hills. And in big words, in big letters, it said, it's not a race. Seven Lakes Ride, which is also coming up June 24th. They're local to our area here. And you will find that's Sunday, June 24th, and that is put on by our friends at Near Rack Earth, who will be on the show in the future. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and get some details there.
I think I'm going to do that this year.
Locally here, good. Locally here, we also have on July 28th the Thread City Century Ride, which is starting at Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. And again, we will have more information on that in the future. There's also, if you're interested in this crazy bicycle racing thing that we've been talking about today, and it's not crazy, it's really a blast, I strongly encourage you to go to bikereg.com. That's BIKEREG.com. And you will find the entire New England schedule there, including the training races, which if you are interested in getting involved in learning how to race a bike, that's the place to do it. You want to learn where it's a training race, not a full-fledged race. You really need, and if you're thinking of doing that, make sure you've been out and riding with people that know what they're doing to help bring you into it. Don't go there on just a whim, okay? My name is Peddlin' Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have been listening to this live or on podcast and you would like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.